I just go with the mindset, whatever it is, you know, not just baseball, but everything. I'm going to give everything I got. I'm not going to let not working hard be the reason for failure, you know. And, you know, another big thing is, I think, where a lot of people get hurt is compare themselves to other people. You know, we're all different. We're all special in our own ways, you know, and I think the quicker and sooner we figure that out, you know, I think that's what kind of helps separate us.
What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 12 of Coming Up Podcast. I'm Matt Schumacher. Our guest this week is Major League Baseball player Ryan Helsley, who is a relief pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals, who just came off a sensational rookie season a year ago in which he posted a sub-3 ERA and was lights out in the Cardinals' postseason campaign, making 5 appearances without allowing a run and striking out 8. On top of that, Ryan's just a great dude. He and I first met back in 2015. I was a rookie broadcaster for the Cardinals' rookie organization in Johnson City, and he happened to get placed there right after he was drafted in the 5th round in 2015. Fun summer for the both of us, and now here he is entering year 2 of his major league career. One of the really cool aspects of Ryan's journey is where he comes from. Small town kid in Cherokee Nation, Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Ryan himself is Native American, and we talk a lot about that throughout the course of our conversation, the importance of his culture and his heritage, why it's significant to him, and how he kind of feels like a representative for the community of Tahlequah and for Cherokee Nation as a whole, being one of very few Native Americans to be playing in the major leagues right now. Helsley was not always pegged as a surefire Major League Baseball player. In fact, he had one scholarship offer coming out of high school, and it was to Northeastern State, a Division II school, and they asked him to change positions. He also wasn't always a pitcher. Those are two cool aspects of his journey as well, which we touch on. And we also talk about his mindset and how he approaches improvement and work ethic. Hope you enjoy the conversation. I sure did. Here we go. It's episode 12 of Coming Up with St. Louis Cardinal Ryan Helsley. All right. I am super stoked to welcome Ryan Helsley to the podcast. Ryan, how you doing, man?
Doing well. How you doing?
I got no complaints. Helsley and I go back a long ways. We haven't seen each other in about 6 years, but we first met in 2015 in the Appalachian League, and you've come a long way since then, my man, pitching in the NLCS last fall.
Yeah, you know, it's been a long journey. You know, small town kid, you know, had to climb a pretty steep ladder, but, you know, it's been a fun journey. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, your story is really cool. I'm excited to talk about that throughout the show, but let's get to the first topic at hand, which is that baseball is back. You got practice later on tonight. The start of the season is just around the corner here in the next few weeks, but you've spent the last, you know, 4 months at home in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, trying to navigate the coronavirus quarantine. Not sure if you're going to play again or what have you, this year. What have you been up to? How have you been staying sharp?
Yeah, you know, it's honestly been really tough. You know, I'm sure a lot of guys the same way, you know, because, you know, a lot of facilities got to follow protocols and stuff to keep everybody safe. So, I mean, that made it very challenging over the course of the break we had, you know, but, you know, luckily I was able to find a spot, you know, with very limited weights and stuff, but, you know, but it was enough to where I felt like I could keep myself in shape and prepared for the season to come if there was going to be one, you know. And most of the time I would play catch with either one of my two brothers, you know, out in the front yard by the house, or my old college coach would be in town sometimes, you know, so I'd hit him up, you know, really just anybody that had any type of baseball experience, you know, just to get some throws in, you know, because having someone to play catch with is a whole lot better than throwing to a net, I can tell you that. but it was good, man. I got all the work in I needed, you know, I feel good, you know, camp's been going for about a week now. Everything's been going nice, so can't complain right now.
And you went back to school online. Finish up getting your degree later on this year. Make mom and dad happy too, right?
Yep, absolutely. You know, I took 15 hours in the summer. You know, I had a lot of downtime, you know, work out 2-3 hours a day. And then, you know, you got 20 hours for the rest of your day, you know, that's a lot of time to do something productive, you know. So I felt like now was as good a time as any to, you know, get back in there and try to get my degree.
Absolutely. Good use of your time. Good use of your time. All right, so you're coming off a great rookie season last year. ERA below 3. You were lights out in the playoffs, and you've been mentioned going into camp this year as a potential closer for the Cardinals, but whether you're a reliever or a closer, the plan is to use you often in high leverage situations, the pressure cooker spots. And
right,
you know, we got to see you as baseball fans, as Cardinals fans, as people who watched the playoffs last year, they got to see you pitch in those pressure cooker situations. 5 appearances, no runs, 8 strikeouts in 5 1/3. I mean, you were stone cold. And I love seeing it. I remember watching it back a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, man, I kind of remember that, Helsley, a little bit from Johnson City, but your velocity's higher, and you just seem to have even more command of your pitches, which makes sense because you're 5 years removed from, you know, your first start in pro ball. But you seem to perform your best in those high-leverage spots. Why do you think that is?
And, you know, I think adrenaline helps a lot. You know, it's kind of like a reaction type thing. You know, you just got to trust your stuff and trust all the work and preparations you put in, you know, over the course of pretty much your entire life, you know, the past 5 years especially. You know, just got to trust that every day when you're playing catch, you're getting better, you know, and working on the small things for, you know, the build up to those big moments. And then you can just, you know, for lack of better terms, go with the flow and really just, you know, trust your stuff, like I said, you know. And I think that's been a big key that I've taken away from this is just learning how to trust my stuff and you know, not try to put too much pressure on myself. You know, we're not all perfect. There's things that, you know, get in your way sometimes, and you got to be able to roll with the punches and, you know, figure things out.
From a fan's perspective and from a broadcaster perspective, you know, the playoffs have a totally different feel. Everybody says this, but it feels like in the playoffs, every pitch matters. The crowd is paying attention more. You know, people are on the edge of their seats. They're not carrying on a conversation in the fifth inning knowing that, you know, does this fifth inning in mid-July matter so much? Well, definitely not as much as the fifth inning in October. Do you sense a different feel as a player, especially, you know, when you've got the ball in your hands on the mound?
You know, you can definitely feel the energy in the stand. You know, I think big tone setters, the change of weather, you know, the cold air, the fall nights, you know, you're out there, it almost feels like football weather. But, you know, you can definitely feel it. Just the energy and the atmosphere of the playoff games were completely different. And, you know, it was so much fun, man. We had a great group of guys last year, and we, you know, gave it our best shot, and hopefully we can do the same thing this year.
Who's an impact reliever or a closer in the league now, or maybe somebody who's retired who you really admire and enjoy watching and kind of pull things from?
Honestly, you know, I like watching DeGrom a lot. I know he's not a reliever, but and honestly, Jordan Hicks helped a lot. You know, he's got more big league experience than me, and our entire bullpen, you know, we got Andrew Miller, Brevia, guys who pitch big time moments, you know, and just being able to learn from those guys and from their experiences and stuff like that. You know, Andrew Miller's track record is good as any relievers, you know, in the game right now, and just be able to sit there and talk to him and really kind of feed off of what he has to say and just soak it all in has really played a huge part.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because one thing I usually ask people who come on the podcast is about if you could think of somebody who's had just a great influence on your career so far or in your life as a young man, who would you point to?
You know, right now in the baseball world, I'll probably say Jason Isringhausen. He's helped me out a lot with my curveball. You know, my first year coming in, I really only threw a fastball, and I don't know if you call it a changeup. It's probably more like a two-seam. I threw it so hard, you know. I just came in, small town, small college kid, you know, and I didn't really have any much of an off-speed pitch. And, you know, he really taught me my first spring training in 2016, kind of that new spike curveball grip. And, you know, it felt good. I started all the way kind of through the minor leagues and had a good feel for it. And last year out of the bullpen, I kind of went away from it a little bit. And it was more of like a fastball cutter pitcher, but, you know, been working on all my pitches this offseason. So hopefully, you know, I can bring that out this year, you know. So we'll see how it goes.
You mentioned being a small town kid and kind of kind of coming up and having like one or two pitches. And part of that is because you, and I don't know if many people know this, you were a field player, an infield player for most of your career, all the way up until the last, you know, little bit of your high school career, when recruiting started to become a thing and you were starting to look around at colleges, and you were recruited by one school, offered one scholarship, and it was to pitch. And it was to pitch at the Division II school, Northeastern State, in your home state of Oklahoma. And I'm curious, you know, for you as a teenager, being told that you only had one offer and that it was to totally change positions going from infield to pitch, what did you think about that at the time?
Yeah, you know, honestly, you know, I was kind of bummed. You know, every kid grows up wanting to hit bombs, you know, and be that kid that's hitting walk-off home runs and stuff, you know, and making the diving plays. You know, that's what the things that you envision as a young kid. You know, and like you said, I only got one offer, and, you know, I was just grateful for that one offer, for the one opportunity. You know, I was taking that as a chance for me to go to school and continue my education, you know, and have the opportunity to have it paid for, you know. So I was very grateful for that, you know. And once I got there, you know, I think I just tried to make the best of my opportunity there. You know, just worked as hard as I could each day to make the most of it. And also, like you said, you know, I even went to college as a two-way guy. You know, I talked to the coach into it, you know, because I tried to convince him I could hit a little, you know, I could swing it still. And so I got to hit in the fall my freshman year of 13. And then the spring came around. He's like, hey, man, I'm sorry, but you're just going to pitch for us. You know, that's where we see you. That's where you're going to help us out the most. So, you know, and hearing that, I wouldn't say I didn't like it, no, but I was willing to do whatever it took to help the team. So, you know, and obviously I think it turned out for the best. And, you know, here I am today.
Yeah, I would say it turned out pretty well. I think it's funny that you bring up, you know, trying to convince the coach that you can hit and that you can be a two-way guy, because I feel like, at least in my experience, kind of being around minor league pitchers, is that there's a sense amongst you guys that you can hit, and there's kind of a pride that goes along with being the best hitting pitcher on the team. Do you feel that with like the bullpen guys in St. Louis? Is there like a little bit of a competition with you guys as far as who can hit the ball the best?
Oh, yeah, definitely in baseball, but not only baseball, you know, all other sports too. We give each other, you know, a hard time all the time about who's the most athletic, you know, who can jump the highest, who can play basketball better, ping pong, you name it, you know. We're just all competitors, you know, and, you know, we make it fun throughout the season, you know, and we've got a great group of guys to be around.
All right, who's the best athlete then in the Cardinals bullpen?
Me, for sure. Or okay. Hicks is very athletic too.
Yeah, Hicks is a big boy, man. I like your confidence. That's why you're going to get the rock at the end of the game. So, you know, you go to Northeastern State around sophomore year. You are a full-time pitcher, and things are starting to click for you a little bit more. But I'm curious, man, because, you know, you talked about having that dream as a kid of, you know, playing baseball at the highest level, but as a position player. Then you're in college and you're pitching, and I'm wondering, at what point did you start to really believe that you could go to the highest level as a pitcher?
You know, like I said, I came into school thinking I was just going to play 4 years, you know, get a degree and, you know, get a 9-to-5 job, whatever that might be, and, you know, kind of just live life. I would say when I kind of realized I had a chance to do something would be, I went and played summer ball in California. I played with the Foresters there. And, you know, I would start throwing a little harder. I hit 96 a few times there, 97. You know, facing good quality D1 guys. You know, I was on a team with Rice, Texas, Arizona State, all big-time D1 schools, you know, and I was kind of holding my own, you know, against those guys and seeing results, you know, and kind of figured out, you know, I had the stuff to be able to pitch against those guys. And I went back for the fall that year in 2014. Scouts just started coming around, you know, calling, you know, and filling out questionnaires and stuff like that. You know, that's kind of when it really hit me that I actually had a chance to do something, you know. And then spring came around and there was, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 scouts at every game, you know, and that was pretty crazy to see, you know, never being around that stuff or never really understanding that I had a chance to, you know, do something like that in the baseball world. You know, I always dreamed as a kid, but it's a little different when it becomes a reality.
you're the first dude who has made his major league debut from Northeastern State. You're also the first dude to make his major league debut from Sequoia High School in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. You've made some history each step of the way. What were you throwing when you first started pitching as far as your velocity? Because last year in the major leagues, you touched 102 a couple of times. But I'm curious, mm-hmm. There's no way you just stepped out there and started throwing 90s, right? Or did you?
No, I mean, I pitched, you know, growing up as a kid, but I was kind of the guy that, you know, if they needed someone to fill in the game here or there, their arms were tired, you know, I could pitch, you know. But I would say my junior high school, I think it was district, somebody had a jugs gun or some type of radar gun there, and I hit 91 a few times, you know. So that was pretty cool to see for the first time, and that's kind of when NSU came around, and I ended up signing with them after my junior year. And then my first fall there, I hit 92 or 93, you know. So I had an uptick there, and the spring rolls around, say it like 90, 91, touching fours every now and then. Then the summer of 14, I went and played summer ball in California and started touching sixes, I think. And then the spring rolled around the year I got drafted in 2015, started touching 97, you know, about every other game. And then the year I got drafted that year in 15, that summer in Johnson City, I hit 98, I think, my very first outing there. And it's just always just kind of been gradual, you know, just I think the maturity and just kind of slowly putting on muscle and weight, you know, and figuring out how to move my body efficiently and effectively as possible kind of played a role, you know.
Just buying into the process. You know, the great thing about Johnson City is that there was, I won't say there was few people in the stands, but it was an intimate enough experience that you could really tell when somebody was heating up a little bit on the mound. Like you could hear the ball whistling through the air. You could hear that pop of the mitt real clearly, especially in my headset up in the booth behind home plate. You know, I want to back up just a little bit now and talk about your roots, because I know that's a really important part of who you are and your story. But you're from Tahlequah. It's the capital of Cherokee Nation. You yourself are a member of Cherokee Nation. And Sequoia was an all-Native American high school. You know, I know that in the off season you live in Tahlequah, you tutor at an immersion school where all the classes are taught in Cherokee, and you tutor some of the younger kids in English. What does your Native American heritage mean to you?
Yeah, you know, it means the world to me, you know, growing up in that area, you know, especially being able to tutor those kids and kind of influence them, you know. I just want to be someone for those kids to look up to, you know, and understand that they can do it too, you know, if they put their mind to it. You know, I came from practically the same background as them, you know. We're all Native American, mostly around there, you know, and just for those kids to understand that their dreams and goals and aspirations are just as attainable as mine, you know, and not to settle for anything less, because, you know, I think that's what the problem with today's world is. Some people, you know, just get content with things and think that things aren't attainable for them, you know, if that makes sense. So I just think that being that type of person for those kids to look up to and, you know, just to be able to relate to, you know, I think being able to be the tutor and going back home every off season and trying to help out any way I can around the community, you know, just kind of helps them understand, you know, that I'm the same as them, you know, I'm a person just like them, you know, I grew up there, you know, because I think we see people on TV and stuff and they almost seem like these fictional people that, you know, aren't really real because, you know, we can't really relate to them.
Yes, totally. That's very cool. And, you know, in all the press clippings and stuff that I read kind of in preparation for the podcast, a lot of the folks back home, you know, for example, when you made your major league debut, there was a story about a meeting at your old high school, and the guy who was going on stage to speak was looking out into the crowd, and he said everybody in the crowd was looking down at their phones trying to check and see if you had entered the game yet or not. So coming from the small town that you come from and being a guy who, you know, is one of very few Native Americans playing in the major leagues right now, there are just so many things that you represent to the community from which you come. Coming from where you come from, there's a lot of folks who are living below the poverty line. It's a small town. You're the first dude from your high school to make his major league debut. Why is it important for you to kind of be that representative of your community?
Yeah, you know, just kind of like I said earlier, just to show people that, you know, Native Americans can do productive things and be, you know, influence society as well, you know, like that we just don't have to live or get by, you know, that we can influence and be those people of public figures that can have those type of influences on things, you know. Just being there from home and stuff, you know, like I said earlier, just trying to be relatable to those people there, you know, just to show them that I'm the same type of person, you know, I've always been, I haven't changed, you know, I'm still who I am. You know, there's a lot of poverty around me and stuff, and, you know, I think people get in the mindset of, you know, that's just how it's supposed to be. That's how it is, you know, if that makes sense. And I think just trying to get people out of that mindset there and, you know, try to get to light a fire under their butt, I guess, for lack of better words, just to try to give them a little bit more motivation that, you know, that we can contribute just like everybody else, you know.
You know, obviously you have a much, much better perspective on this than I do. But, you know, the Native American community, a lot like many of the other communities in our country that aren't white, have been oppressed, marginalized in many ways going back hundreds of years. One thing you talked about a little bit during the playoffs last year was just the importance of respecting Native American heritage, not only in sport, but just in general. And of course, that's a big topic of conversation right now in the sports world, just with everything going on about the Redskins. And you took a position with the Braves and using the tomahawk chop and talked about how, from your perspective as a Native American, you sense a little bit of disrespect with these, you know, various mascots or cheers or chants or whatever that are depicting Native Americans in a certain way. And I think it's important to touch on this just quickly, because you have a great perspective being not only a professional athlete with ties to the traditions of sport, but also being a Native American yourself. So could you just talk a little bit about your position?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the main point that I get when I go home, you know, because I hear people talk about it, and, you know, that's not everyone, you know, in the same boat. They don't all feel like that it bothers them, you know, that they think it should be changed. You know, there are people that like it and stuff, but, like, the main thing that I get, that I gather from people who, you know, don't appreciate the mascots or don't think it's honoring Native Americans, is that it's just putting that stereotype on the every Native American the same. You know, the Redskin image is that all Indians look like that have braided hair or that have a feather in their head. You know, that's the first image that comes to people's minds of Native Americans today. Or the braids, you know, the chop is that, you know, like that they were warriors, that they were savages, you know, and, you know, Native American people, they weren't fighting people. Yeah, they fought, you know, there's always been fights, that, you know, there's times when they needed to fight, you know, just like in any country or culture, you know, there's always times where things needed to be settled and stuff like that. But, you know, for the most part, they were very loving and very in touch with nature type people, you know, they didn't fight much. And, you know, I think that's the main thing that people are trying to get away from society, is just that people have this one certain stereotype over Native Americans. You know, I think that's just the big thing that they're trying to get rid of and try to show people that that's not who we are, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really admire the way that you use your platform to speak out about issues that you care about and that many other people care about, and to kind of give a voice to the Native American community and be an inspiration and a representative to the community of Tahlequah. I want to jump back into baseball and kind of your journey individually in the sport. We've talked a little bit already about your early come up, coming out of Sequoia High School, having one scholarship offer, going to Northeastern State, then you're drafted in the fifth round. And in many other sports, being as high a draft pick as you were, those guys usually just go on a few months later and make their debut at the highest level. You know, for example, in the NFL, you get a third round, fifth round draft pick. They're perhaps playing, you know, against the Cowboys on a Sunday 6 months after being drafted. That's not the case in baseball. And I think that's another thing that makes the journey so special. You spent 4 or 5 years in the minor leagues, drafted in 2015, and then you make your debut in 2019. And one of the cool things about baseball is the call-up story. When a guy finds out that he's going to play in the major leagues for the first time, that he's going to make his debut. What do you remember about that night for you when you found out you'd be getting the call-up?
Yeah, you know, it was really special. We had just gotten back from San Antonio. We flew in. I think we got back to AutoZone Park in Memphis there about 1 a.m. And I was getting off of the bus, you know, about to go up to my truck and go to my apartment. And the manager calls me over, Ben Johnson, and he says, hey, Pels, let me talk to you for a second, you know. And I think I was starting the next day or maybe the day after, you know. I thought he was going to tell me, push my bullpen back or ask him if I wanted to throw or something, you know, along those lines. And, you know, he tells me, hey, you're going to the major leagues tomorrow, you know. And it was just like the craziest rush of feelings, you know, all bundled into one, you know, just having so many emotions come over me. And it was just a great feeling, you know, and all my teammates came up to me and congratulated me. And, you know, I got up to my room probably about 1:30, called my parents, you know, and told them, you know, they bought flights immediately. They were going to drive, but it was like 14 hours, so they decided not to. But they bought flights, you know, and it was just a really special moment and cool to share with them, you know, because it's something that I had always dreamed of, you know, and accomplishing a lifelong dream like that, you know, is something that you can't really put into words, you know. It's just an amazing feeling, and, you know, just to be able to share it with my family members was unbelievable, and I'm very grateful for that.
Going from AAA, where you're playing in front of, you know, 15,000, 20,000, to then taking that last step, 48,000 in a major league stadium, you got the big league uniform on, you're in a big league dugout, you toe the rubber. Be honest, did you feel anything different, or did it seem different or even more special for you at all? Or was it literally just, you know, going through the motions again?
You know, obviously having my parents there was huge and made it even more special, you know. I think you just got to trust your stuff and really understand the work that you put in, you know, earlier during the season or throughout your career, you know, is going to pay off, and that you don't have to do anything extra. You know, you got there for a reason and your stuff's good enough, you know, you're there for a reason, like I said, and, you know, you just let the game speed up on you. I think that's where, you know, a lot of guys will tell you that they get hurt when the game speeds up and they feel like it gets out of their control. But, you know, definitely that first game, you know, I had a ton of adrenaline, you know, first big league game, huge crowd, you know, in Miller Park, you know, so at the Dome, so it feels even louder in there, all the echoes and stuff. But, you know, after the first batter, you know, I really kind of settled in and, you know, just went right after guys and, you know, just put my best foot forward. And, you know, I think that's what guys will tell you that help them the most is just trusting their stuff.
You're a guy who hasn't been solely a pitcher his whole life. We talked about that a little bit earlier. You were an infielder. You expected that you would play college ball as an infielder. So you've done some catching up in a short amount of time. And, you know, no matter the industry that you're in or no matter the sport you play, there's always a learning curve, and it always requires intense focus and work ethic to hone your craft, to get better. How do you approach improvement and, in particular, kind of developing your craft as a pitcher? Because it really is an art form.
You know, I just go with the mindset, you know, with whatever it is, you know, not just baseball, but everything. I'm going to give everything I got, and, you know, I'm not going to let not working hard be the reason for failure, you know. And I think that's always been something that's stuck with me. You know, another big thing is I think where a lot of people get hurt is starting to compare themselves to other people. You know, we're all different. We're all special in our own ways, you know. And I think the quicker and sooner we figure that out and understand what ways we're better than someone else or more unique, you know, I think that's what kind of helps separate us. You know, and it could just be your mindset or a skill asset, you know, who knows. That's for you to figure out, you know, for you to understand about yourself. And, you know, I think the older I've gotten, you know, the more time I've spent in this game and being around all these vets and stuff, and, you know, just picking up on, you know, what helps other guys and stuff like that, you know, and stuff. And I definitely think, you know, those two things have been huge for me.
And that brings me to one of my final questions. It's a question I ask everybody who comes on the show. And that is, if you can think back to some point in your life or in your career to this point, what's a failure or maybe a challenge that you've overcome or that you've learned from the most to this point in your life or your career?
I mean, I've had a couple of minor injuries in the minor leagues, you know, and 2016, you know, I had my first injury on my shoulder was bothering me, and I missed a couple months there, you know, and I think really understanding how to go about, you know, being hurt and, you know, just really taking advantage of the downtime, I guess, you know, per se, that it's there for a reason, you know, your body needs to heal and not trying to rush back too soon, you know, and in 2018 as well, I was in AAA and I was pitching pretty well, and I had a, I don't remember if it was, I think it was a shoulder issue again, just like a, wasn't a shoulder strain. I think my, I forgot what they call it, but anyway, you know, I was pitching well, and that was my 40-man year, you know, so I was thinking maybe I had a chance to come up a little early, but end up missing, you know, the whole second half of that season, which was really tough, you know, to sit out, you know, as a competitor, you want to get in there and, you know, and compete, you know, and try to prove yourself, but, you know, I made the decision that I needed to, you know, just relax, let my body get to as close to 100% as possible to give myself, you know, longevity instead of, you know, that short case of it, if you catch what I'm saying there. You know, just I think just really understanding how to maneuver injury or understand your body, you know, and understanding how to pitch when you don't feel good and the difference between not feeling good and being hurt, you know, I think that's been a big thing that, you know, it's helped me so far, and some things that I've gone through that's been kind of challenging.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Did those injuries in 2016 and 2018 to your, I'm guessing to your throwing shoulder, did that change at all how you approached your training or your bullpen sessions or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely not. I think we take advantage when we're young, they're always going to feel good, you know, we can just wake up and, you know, get on and just roll right into games or work out or whatever, you know. You know, I really started to get a better stretch routine and like pre-game routine, you know, throughout the offseason, just a lot of stretching, and honestly paying attention to my diet a lot too has helped, you know, so I think those two things really played a huge role.
All right, there you have it. Stretching and nutrition, the keys to longevity in baseball and in life, you could say. My last question for you, Ryan, we've talked a lot about your journey coming from a small town, going to a small college, getting found as kind of a diamond in the rough, if you will. What would your advice be to someone who comes from a similar situation as you? You know, somebody who was overlooked coming out of high school and had kind of all these little hoops to jump through, changing positions, only getting one scholarship offer, et cetera, et cetera. What would your advice be to somebody who's in a situation like that, but desires to get to the next level, whether it's in sport or in something totally different?
I think if you just go into the opportunity, you know, with a positive mindset of being thankful and grateful for that opportunity, you know, I think baseball is unique and it's different in that aspect. You know, you don't have to be D1, you know, like football or basketball to really get looked at or have a chance, you know. So baseball, you know, if you can throw a baseball and you're good, they're going to find you, you know. That's the one thing I was always told, was that if you can compete and show some things that the scouts like, you're going to have a chance to play. You know, and I think if kids go with that mindset that they have a chance to do whatever they want, you know, no matter where they're at, if they choose their opportunity for the best of their abilities, that they'll, you know, get to where they want to be.
Well said. Well said. Ryan Helsley, really appreciate you coming on the Coming Up podcast, my friend, and pumped that baseball is coming back. And looking forward to watching you throw some heat this coming Major League season.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.